Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by our great friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Best products, great sales staff, terrific service department. All in one package, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury, Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. All-Star Game is tonight. Last night, the home run contest. Carl Ravage and Mark Teixeira with the call on ESPN.
29 seconds to hit two. That was a line drive off the top of the wall.
There it is. Piazza fires the bat up. He's your home run derby champion of 2019.
He didn't even need the 30-second bonus. How impressive was that? What a show we saw tonight. Vlad Jr. and Alonzo, what a respect right there. Nothing but love. That was fun.
Two terrific young hitters. I mean, you had Bell out there last night. Terrific young hitter. Acuna, terrific young hitter. Is it my understanding that Pete Alonso was going to donate at least some of his money to the Wounded Warrior Project?
Yeah, he mentioned that Buster Olney was talking to him in the post interview, and he had mentioned that another charity he was going to give a percentage. So, yeah, terrific.
Well, kind of put a lot of the onus on Vlad Guerrero Jr. Found out ahead of time. I want to give some of my proceeds to the Wounded Warrior Project. Vlad Sr. grew up with no means and then had a great major league career, mostly with the Expos. Vlad Jr. was the beneficiary of that and grew up really not wanting much. You want $1 million? I think I'll keep it. That doesn't look good. Pete Alonso is going to donate it to Wounded Warrior Project. And let's see. I'm trying to see what the other charity was. But good for him.
Oh, he was going to be giving 5% to Wounded Warriors Project and another 5% to the Tunnels to Towers Foundation, raising money for families of the first responders from 9/11.
Oh, my goodness. This guy's looking better by the swing. How about that? 322 total home runs last night. How about that? It's pretty impressive. Guerrero hit 29 home runs opening round, broke Josh Hamilton's record at Yankee Stadium. I was doing a game that night. I was actually in Brooklyn that night when Josh Hamilton did that. And you know who my counterpart was doing the game on the Brooklyn side that night? Boomer Esiason. Because the game was on WFAN. And we were trading things all night long as to what Hamilton was doing. It was pretty funny, actually. All right. Let's talk a little basketball. Zion Williamson will not be playing, by the way, anymore in the Summer League. Jim Eisenhoffer is joining us, writes in New Orleans about the Pelicans, but he also has been a color analyst on the Pels Network and has been doing color analyst work at the Summer League in Las Vegas, and that's where he is now. Hi, Jim. How have you been?
Hey, thanks for having me. Good to be here.
Why on goodness green earth did Zion Williamson even bother playing a summer league game?
Well, I mean, I think I don't think we're going to get to the point where the top few guys in the draft just decide, okay, I'm not going to play summer league at all. I think it's something that, I mean, being totally honest, I think the league, of course, wants not just the summer league, but the NBA wants those guys to play.
Exactly.
He hadn't played since March in a game, so, I mean, to some extent, you do want these guys out there to play. I get that there's always an injury risk, but you could say that for any situation. So I thought he was only going to play a couple games, so it's unfortunate that he had a little bit of a bumps and bruise on his knee for the first game, but I honestly don't think he was going to play that much anyways.
He did some marvelous things in his brief period of time. Zion Williamson things that we're used to seeing. He also didn't look like he was exactly in what you would call primo shape.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, I think that's something that he's going to have to focus on the rest of the offseason. I'm not sure if when you're in the position that he's in, if you get pulled a million different ways and it affects your conditioning or your ability to stay on top of that. For a lot of these guys, they're not in game shape, so because they haven't been playing, they've just been playing pickup. So I think that's definitely something that he's going to work on over the next few months to get ready for the real season in the fall.
What was your earthquake experience like?
I was actually in mid-sentence. I was talking about something on the radio, calling the game. Ball was coming up to court. It was a chance for the analyst to get in there and say something. And my partner, Daniel Salerson, who does our play-by-play, was actually kind of joking with me that he was more frightened by the fact that for the first 10 seconds or so of the earthquake, I didn't react. He was about the earthquake itself. I'm a broadcasting rookie. I've done probably 6 or 8 games, regular season games with Daniel over the last 2 or 3 years. But I was so concentrating on what I was saying, and I felt the area that we're sitting in shake a little bit, but we both thought initially that because I've been in Thomas and Mack Center here in Las Vegas a bunch of years, and I thought that someone had like bumped into our table, and so our table was shaking because someone had kind of walked into it. But then when it kept going, it was like, okay, wait a minute, that's not just somebody walking into the table, that's something. And then you started seeing fans, and keep in mind our headsets are on the whole time.
Right.
We start seeing fans running towards the concourse. So that was when it hit me that, oh man, we just had an earthquake. So yeah, it was interesting. It was definitely a weird vantage point to have that to be on the air when it happened.
How many minutes do you think you spent staring at the scoreboard and the speaker swaying back and forth?
Probably. I'd say maybe 2 or 3.
Okay.
I mean, because at first we were all looking around like, what the heck just happened and what are they going to do? And then I looked up and saw the speakers still swaying back and forth, and I was like, uh-oh, I don't know if we're going to be able to continue this game because, I mean, obviously they need to examine a bunch of different parts of the arena to make sure that nothing is going to fall
right
on the court. And then they ended up just canceling the game after maybe a half hour we waited or so, but yeah, it was unique. I think that was the third or fourth time that I've experienced an earthquake, and that was by far the most shaking I've ever seen, like hands down, compared to the other ones I had been part of.
All right, so beyond the earthquake, let's go big picture now with the Pelicans. Then I'll get into Tony Carr with you in a few moments. Big picture, they losing Anthony Davis. Because they deal him. Did you like the return from the Pelicans' point of view on the trade? Because obviously something incredibly significant was given up, one of the top 10
sure.
players in the league.
Yeah, I mean, instead of kind of breaking down my opinion, I thought it was great, but I'm going by really a lot of everything I read in the days after the trade where a lot of people said that it was probably the biggest overall package that a team has gotten for a superstar in the last I don't know how many years. If you look at some of the other players that have been in similar situations the last few years, like Paul George and a couple other guys, Carmelo Anthony, going back a few years.
Right.
For the Pelicans to be able to get 3 young guys that have promised to keep getting better and are in their early 20s, and to also get they turned it into 3 first round picks this year and a second round pick this year, and then also all these multiple picks that are going to happen over the next 5 or 6 years. I mean, they got a lot in that trade, so And really, to bring it to back a little bit briefly to Summer League, the two first-round picks that they got that were part of the trade, that they traded down from number four, both were incredible last night just in their first game. So it's early, but I really like what they ended up doing in that trade. It looks like it's going to be something that works out really well.
In the end, how much of this has to revolve around Zion Williamson, and do you think there's enough help around him to make his transition to the league easier and make the Pelicans competitive?
Yeah, I mean, I do think that David Griffin, the who's running the front office now, has tried to make it clear that it's not going to be just on Zion, that they're not relying on him to be the franchise savior. And I think I think a lot of times you would say that anyways, but I think in this case it's very true in that they actually do. He's not coming into a situation, one of the comparisons I use is he's not coming into a case where LeBron came into the Cavs in 2003 and they were one of the worst teams in the league and they had almost no talent.
Right.
I think they won like 15 games the year before he got there. He helped them improve by a lot, but they still didn't make the playoffs. I mean, this Pelicans team has a lot of guys, and it's definitely not going to be the case where they're going to roll the ball out and say, okay, Zion, you need to carry us as a 19-year-old rookie. I mean, there's guys like Drew Holiday. They picked up Brandon Ingram in the trades. They have a really deep roster as well. So I think they're doing everything they can to make it so that expectations are reasonable for Zion, even though, as we all know, we've been part of sports and media for a while.
Sure.
It's going to be probably impossible to keep people from expecting him to be incredible right off the bat, and if he doesn't average 25 points a game and has 8 dunks in his first game, people are going to say that it's disappointing. So, but I do think that he's going to benefit a lot from the situation, the surroundings that he's coming into.
All right, Penn State's Tony Carr is a part of the Summer League roster for the Pelicans. He was a second-round pick by New Orleans a year ago. Jim, you and I have talked about him before. He spent this past season playing with two different teams in Italy. Does he have any chance in your mind of making the Pelicans roster? Because David Griffin did not draft him.
I think it's going to be tough this year, and partly because, I mean, they have 6 or 7 guys that have more either in terms of guards that have you have people like Drew Holiday who's been, you know, all-star level player. Have several other guys that have a ton of traction. I mean, they have so many guards right now that it's going to be hard for some of the players on the roster that fans are really excited about and can't wait to see play. It's going to be hard for people like Frank Jackson from Duke. It's going to be hard for them to get a ton of minutes and get carve out a role in the rotation. So I would say for Tony, realistically, it's going to be very difficult. But I think that the way that the draft rights work is that he would have the option of you know going back overseas potentially, and that they would keep his rights. So it just does seem like it would be very a formidable task for him to make the team this year. And if he did make the team, the chances of him being able to play are very, very
right, because he's not on the 17-man roster. I mean, not on that. So he doesn't even have a two-way contract with the Pelicans at this particular point. There's only 14 guys on the Summer League roster. And they rotate who gets to play. So guys miss games because it's not their turn to play because they just want to see people play. That's how it works.
Right.
But the other night when I watched him, it looked like he was playing a lot of two guard, and there wasn't what I would call a lot of movement in that two guard.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not sure if you guys got a chance to watch the game. I know I'm actually from New York. I know how late some of these West Coast games are. But he actually played probably his best game last night, I think, of the last 2 years in Summer League.
Good.
He was playing at two guard a lot, again, like you said. I think one of the things that he has, it seems like he's worked on compared to what he showed last year, he has to play off the ball a ton more than he did in college.
Exactly.
I know he was the best player on the team in college, and they needed him to, it sounds like, I mean, you would know better than me, but it sounds like they needed him to carry the offense at times and give him the ball and say, you can isolate here and go one-on-one because you're better than the vast majority of the defenders that are guarding you. Whereas I think at the NBA level, the pro level, he's not going to be able to do that as much. There's very few guys that come out of college and are able to play that way just because the talent is so high and there's so many teams have so many options. So really, I think his spot-up shooting is one of the things that he is crucial as far as his ability to to keep getting better and give himself a better chance to succeed at the pro level. And fortunately for him, he made a couple of those spot-up threes last night where in the NBA the ball gets swung and you're on the weak side and you have to be able to make that shot. And he did that a couple times and had 13 points. So he played really well last night. I do think that with some of the guys that the Pelicans have pretty much already decided are going to sit probably the rest of Summer League, like Frank Jackson, he should be able to, don't quote me on this, but I think he should be able to be on the court a decent amount in each of the last few games of Summer League.
Yeah, he had 11 of his 13 points in the fourth quarter last night. So he ended up with 13 points in 13 minutes. Big picture now, after all the signings that have happened, and New Orleans has been in the thick of it because they dealt Anthony Davis to the Lakers. With all the signings, everything for about 2 months, Jim, was the Lakers are going to get all these guys, the Knicks are going to get all these guys. And in the end, the Lakers got Anthony Davis. The Knicks didn't get anybody. Mm-hmm. I mean, does Julius Randle count? And it was spread out. The Warriors lost a bit but gained Russell. Obviously, Durant won't be able to play this year, but they also got him and Kyrie Irving in Brooklyn. Is the league better balanced today, especially when Kawhi Leonard made his move to the Clippers along with Paul George?
Oh, no doubt. No doubt. I think in every way, I think the league is a lot more uncertain as far as who the favorites are. And even in just the Western Conference, there's a ton of parity between, I don't know, the top six, eight teams. It doesn't seem like it's been like this in a long time where you're going into a season and you see people make their super early power ranking lists, and you have multiple teams in the West, for example, that are listed as number one. Some people have Utah, some people have the Lakers, some people have go down the list. So, I mean, personally, I think it's great for the NBA that there's been, over the last few years, there's been so many casual fans who've said to me or us, you know, in New Orleans, that I want to get into the NBA, but I feel like it's pointless in terms of everyone knows who's going to win, with how dominant Golden State was for a stretch there. So I think this is really positive for the league in terms of getting more people and more cities actively involved in paying attention and believing that they have a chance to win it all.
And finally, how do you like being a radio color analyst when you do the games?
It's fun. It's good, actually. It's definitely more intense than being sitting there as a writer and tweeting during the game and being able to pick my spots of when I want to say something or tweet something. So it's great. We have a great time. My radio partner Daniel is a good friend of mine, so we have a lot of fun with it. And I know Summer League is a little bit more laid back than the real season, so you can joke around a little bit more and have fun with everything. But yeah, it's a good experience. I'm definitely more qualified to be a writer than a broadcaster, but I still enjoy it. So it's been fun so far.
Jim, absolute pleasure. Thanks so much for your time once again. Really enjoyed it.
Hey, great to have Jim on the show again. As Jim Eichenhofer joins us from New Orleans. Actually, he was in Las Vegas, and he'll be doing the next couple of games on radio for the Pelicans Radio Network, covering the Summer League, minus Zion. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Great to have you back with us, brought to you by our good friends at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. One thing that happens at this time of the year is the roster is put out. And the roster is put out for both football and basketball. All right, and as Mark Brennan, who will be on the show with us on Thursday from 24/7 Sports, writes that when you look at the Penn State football roster, you will not see number 18 tight end Jonathan Holland there. He would show up at spring practice, but he did not participate in spring practice. And when you look at the tight end part of it for Penn State, P- Pat Freiermuth, whom I saw last night. Pat was at the game last night. His friend Kobe Taylor plays for Batavia. So Pat was at the game last night, so I talked to him briefly. Well, you got him and Nick Bowers and Zach Kuntz.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us. All right, so let's get to some Penn State football notes. They put out the roster, the summer roster, and with Live for Life coming up Friday evening at 5 o'clock, you know, there are going to be certain things that people will see or maybe not see. Well, you're not going to see Jonathan Holland, who is not on the roster. And obviously, let's face it, the other people that have been removed from the roster, Tommy Stevens will be removed from the roster, obviously. He's at Mississippi State now. And snapper Kevin Cahill also is not on the roster any longer. All right, so there's that part. They've also taken C.J. Holmes, who had been, he'd been a running back at Notre Dame. He walked on at Penn State. I want to say his original number here was 33, then changed it to 48. Now he's going to wear 46, and he's been moved to safety. So he's been moved to safety. And that's fine. Because Devin Ford's here now. And Penn State is going to have depth at running back. And Devin Ford, by the way, is going to wear 28. And Jordan Stout now is on the roster, the transfer from Virginia Tech. Place kicker, he'll wear 98. And Jaquan Brisker is now here. Brisker is a player that's going to bear watching in training camp. A little bit older. He wears number 7. I know they've been very anxious to get him on campus. And he's here. John Dunmore, the wide receiver from Hollywood, Florida, is also on campus. He's going to wear number 8, by the way, at wide receiver. You may be wondering about Devin Ford. He's going to wear 28. He is also here. Ford's presence in combination with Noah Kane, and you already have, obviously, Journey Brown and Ricky Slade, allows them to give C.J. Holmes another position, and he needs another position because at running back, he is not going to leapfrog those four guys. He'd have to have the training camp of all training camps to do that, and he is not going to be able to do that. So at least at safety, it gives him an opportunity, at least at a spot where when I've talked about 44 spots, so it's the 22 positions, and so 44 is the 2-deep. When I'm looking at the 2-deep of this team, the 3 spots I'm looking at that need to be shored up depth-wise, and I think the answers are here depth-wise, already on campus. But another safety was one of those I initially listed. Now, is it a John Patrician, a fifth-year guy who's fought some injuries? Is it maybe a Tyler Rudolph? I thought Tyler Rudolph did some good things in the spring. So is it him? Does he make an advance? Does he become the fourth safety? Or is it Jaquan Brisker? And I know they've been anxious to see him and see what he can do. Well, for C.J. Holmes, this is an opportunity for him. Because they are indeed looking for that fourth safety. So that'll be an opportunity for him. For Jonathan Holland, look, tight end is a spot where Penn State does have
a fair amount of talent there. Freiermuth is outstanding. And I had a nice 5-minute talk with Pat last night. He was there to see his buddy Kobe Taylor play for Batavia. Kobe Taylor's from Portsmouth, New Hampshire, and Pat, of course, is from Marshfield, Massachusetts, or as they would say in Marshfield, Mashfield. And Freiermuth has a chance to be exceptional. Then right behind him, you got Nick Bowers. And Nick Bowers, if he stays injury-free, which he did last season, he is a powerful force at that tight end spot because he is an outstanding physical blocker. And he also showed last year his nice soft hands. I mean, you just have to even go back to the last game he played, catching that touchdown pass in the corner of the end zone against Kentucky in the Citrus Bowl. Now you bring in Zach Kuntz, length, a different look at tight end. People wondered with his height, where is he? Where is Zach, for example, when it comes to his weight? And that's something a lot of people wonder about. What about Zach's weight? Yeah, when you look at a guy like Bowers, he's 260. When you look at a guy like Freiermuth, Pat's actually dropped down to 256, so Pat's down 6 pounds. Kuntz is at 243 now. Okay, that's functional. That's operational. You can work with that. And then there's the young kid, Brenton Strange. Now, he's not going to be like Zach Kuntz, who's 6'7", 243. I mean, Strange is 6'3", 233. And I talked with Tyler Bowen, the tight end coach. It was during the spring I talked to him about Strange. And when I talked to him about Strange, he said, well, the first week, he says, geez, he's really kind of feeling his way through it. You could tell he was like, He says, and now, he says, we've got something here. And Strange did, over the past final 3 weeks of the spring, really did show something. And I thought that was impressive. He's going to be a really good prospect here. And he doesn't have the pressure, at least initially, of having to play right away. And that helps. But there will not be Jonathan Holland on the roster. As Penn State moves forward to get to training camp. So that's where they are. Live for Life will be Friday. Be a chance for all the fans. They'll open the doors at 4:30, and the event will start at 5. And I would say probably by about 6:30 it'll be done. And they're really good at dealing with the fans, signing autographs, things like that. First chance to get a look at some of the freshmen, or maybe a guy like Jaquan Brisker. As I mentioned earlier, I've talked about this before. Yeah, I'd like to see the development of one more solid safety in there, maybe two, give you five. I'd like to see the development of another wideout, maybe two more, maybe three more. That would give you eight. It's really good. And then the look at the offensive line, I'd like to see at least a couple more guys step in there and give them 10 if you can. Now, one of those guys obviously would have been Juice Scruggs. Juice Scruggs has made really, really good progress. He really has. That doesn't mean he's going to be playing against Idaho or anything like that. Just, let's let him work his way back at his own pace. But the young guy that when James and I talked 2 weeks ago, right around that, I think last time we talked was 2 weeks ago, that he and I kept talking about was Caden Wallace. I know he's a freshman, but he has a lot of attributes that they like. A lot of attributes that they like. And is he a guy that then steps up? Now, you're hoping that someone like a Bryce Effner, who's now been on the team a couple of years, is, you know, is this the time that maybe he starts again? You're hoping a couple guys that have been there, that the door opens for them a little bit and they take advantage of it. Is he one of those guys that takes advantage of it? That's what we're waiting to see. But overall, I like this team. There's a lot of things about this team I really like. And I think that it's a division which I'm not so sure. I think people are making certain assumptions, but I don't think in reality you can figure it out. Because Ohio State with Ryan Day, we got three games of it. But obviously it was three games. Using Urban Meyer's system in conjunction with Ryan Day. Now it's all Ryan Day where he's got to run the show. And I don't really have a feel as to what a Ryan Day football team looks like. I don't care what he did in the three games.
It's going to be interesting to see how he can keep that program, forward, keep that momentum going, and just exactly what time that will be, whether it'll be maybe later this year or a couple of years down the road, we can truly say that Ryan Day has his footprint stamped on the program. Of course, that would probably be maybe two or three years, after he gets all his guys.
He's recruited well.
Yeah.
I mean, he's off to a good start there. He certainly is backed up been able to back up the name with of Ohio State with what he's done. He's been able to recruit, he's used the name. And who knows? Jim Harbaugh? Who knows? I mean, Don Brown's an excellent defensive coordinator, and they've certainly had depth on that team last year. They're guys that they brought off the bench and thought they were really good, but they still lost a lot of talent. When you lose David Long at corner, and you lose Bush at middle linebacker, and you lose Winovich, and you lose Gary, I mean, it's not like they didn't suffer losses over there. They did. And I don't know. Shea Patterson, I think, is a good quarterback. I think their wideouts are okay. I don't think their wideouts are awesome and incredible. I think they're okay. I think their tight ends actually were really good last year, and they've got to replace those guys. Their offensive line is very good. And at running back, I don't know. And Chris Evans has been suspended. I don't know. Michigan State. Oh, Michigan State has almost everybody back. But they also have almost everybody back from a 7-6 team. So I don't know. Is having everybody back on a 7-6 team make you suddenly feel like you're a 10-2 team? Or are there reasons why you were 7-6? Those are the four that you're looking at. I think it's wide open.
I think the people in Michigan feel that way too, just for the fact, okay, Ohio State's got a new coach. We'll see what Penn State can do with a new quarterback. But I just wonder, we heard this last year. Oh, man, pressure's on Harbaugh to have a great year. I don't know if we're going to hear that all that much going into this year, just because of all that wealth of defensive talent that you just mentioned that have just moved on to the next level, to the NFL.
Yeah, I just don't know what to expect from them. See, that's the entire part of this that's really interesting. I don't quite know what to expect from Ohio State. I don't quite know what to expect from Michigan. I don't quite know what to expect from Michigan State. I thought going into last year, I had a better handle on where everybody stood going in. And this season, I'm not so sure. I just had to vote, and I'm not going to tell you who I voted for. But you have to vote for five players in the East, five players in the West. You know what I found was interesting? I'll just at least give you a generalization. I voted for more defensive players in the East than I did offensive players. Now, in the West, I voted for more offensive players.
And speaking of the West, you just wonder if Northwestern can parlay into going into back-to-back conference championship games, where if last year is just an anomaly.
Well, this is where you're wondering about Nebraska. First of all, let's start with this. Adrian Martinez. Jack and I were watching, we were at Pitt that night. We're watching Nebraska play Colorado, and eventually Martinez in the fourth quarter gets hurt. But he's playing one heck of a game. And the two of us looked at each other and said, you know what? They've got themselves a quarterback. So I think in terms of a starting point for Scott Frost, is he's got himself a quarterback. Now the question is, can they be better defensively? I think offensively they're going to be all right, but defensively, can they be better? Wisconsin has Jonathan Taylor. But Cone's got to be better quarterback. It's his show now. I like Northwestern, but Hunter Johnson, the transfer from Clemson, is going to have to step up. He's got to be the guy. Now, Patty Fisher at linebacker is a tremendous player. I really like him a lot. Minnesota's not bad. Not quite sold totally on their quarterbacks, but they got a wideout, Johnson, that is just really, really good. So I think the West is more competitive now, too. And Iowa's going to be very good. They've got the returning quarterback in Nate Stanley. They've got, now, no Akram Wadley. I mean, the running back spot is not really settled for them going in. But Epinesa at defensive end, big-time player. I think he's really good. I think their linebackers are good. I was a good team. Penn State's got to go out there and play. So, I think the whole conference is wide open, and there are just no sure answers in this particular year. That's why when I look at this, I keep thinking to myself, you know what? Penn State's talented, they're young, but you know what? They got a real shot. A real shot.
When it comes to car buying, there's the other guy's way, and then there's the SMC way. The other guys force you into a vehicle you really don't want. The Sunbury Motors way lets you take the time you need to browse, ask questions, and take the test drive and think on it. For over 100 years, the Mertz family and all their employees have made your experience the most pleasant one you'll ever have. The other guys won't offer you the best price for your trade, no matter how much they say they will. The SMC way is their promise to provide you with the most money the market shows your vehicle is worth. The SMC way is to offer you all applicable factory rebates on new vehicles and generous discounts. Looking for a pre-owned vehicle? The SMC way checks each vehicle in a 200-mile radius to determine the lowest price, then beat it. It's the lowest price promise, just part of the SMC way. The choice is up to you, the other guy's way or the SMC way. The SMC way wins every time. Sunbury Motors Company in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, and at sunburymotors.com. Selling more cars and satisfying more customers for over 100 years.